Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 139 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her rough patches in her relationships. Oh boy, this is going to be such a great segment. Before we start in, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review this podcast, because I'm just sitting here waiting to hear from you. I'm just telling you right now, I love your feedback, and to hear from you kind of makes my day. All right, welcome to Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
It's time to talk about the rough patch. We've all been there. And if you haven't, well, you haven't lived. What can I say? We have the author of the actual book, The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. Boy, I love that, art of living together. The author is psychologist Dr. Daphne DeMarnif. Ah, what a beautiful name. And she is a psychologist and the author of Maternal Desire on Children, Love, and the Inner Life. In her clinical practice, she offers psychotherapy to couples and individuals. She teaches and lectures widely on marriage, couples therapy, adult development, and parenthood. Her research and scholarly work have been published in professional journals. And she and her husband live in, guess where? It's where I was born and raised, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Love that place. Dr. DeMarnif, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, what I have in my hot little hands is your book. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Don't yell at me. But when I looked at all the chapter headings and everything, right, guess the one that I ran to immediately. It was not chapter
you
one. That's your big hint.
Oh, okay.
Staying or leaving.
Uh-huh.
I went directly to staying or leaving. You know, I really think, you know, I did this with my team and I said, which one do you go to first? And sure to form, I think they all kind of crowded around staying or leaving. It's sort of like, okay, let's get right to it here. Do we stay or do we leave? And I just, you know, clearly all the chapters that you wrote building up to this, we're just literally filled with nuggets for us to learn more about this whole issue of how you get through these rough patches. And in this staying or leaving, I'm going to frame it up with your own words, because there were some things in this book that I just thought were priceless. Life is lived forward, but self-knowledge takes time and experience. We all come to marriage with the completely valid hope of being loved for ourselves. We have the right to expect love and the responsibility to give love. That is the sacred human compact at the heart of marriage. It's what we strive to commit to, honor, nurture, and remember in good times and bad. I just thought that was beautiful, and a beautiful way to kind of frame things up. So, let's get right to it. Marriage in America today. Well, you know, first of all, a lot of people aren't even getting married. They're just sort of hanging out together for years and years. So we have to keep that in mind. But in general, couples are trying to have closer marriages over longer lives than ever before. And college-educated couples have the lowest divorce rate of all. How are they making that work, Dr. DeMarnif?
Yeah, so I do think it's interesting in 2018 to consider, first of all, when we're thinking about marriage, that we do live longer than previous generations. It's been called the longevity dividend, right? So we also have an ideal and an aspiration to have close and intimate marriages, which was not always the mainstream model of what marriage was for. So this presents people with a certain kind of challenge. And what I talk about in the book is the challenge, the work of marriage, is having emotional communication and being able to be vulnerable and open and present to being connected to the person that you live with 24/7. And that is actually a huge challenge because, of course, stresses get in the way, problems get in the way, bad patterns of solving conflict get in the way. Now, what's interesting nowadays is that if you look at the pattern of divorce in our country, there's sort of two lines on the graph. The people who are getting divorced the least are the ones who have more education and more economic resources. And on an intuitive level, that makes sense because people have less economic stress. They have more opportunity. They may even have more time to process their issues. People in the lower end of education and economic resources get married less and divorce more. And you can imagine why that might be. So one good thing is that it seems that when two people marry who are more educated and have more money, they tend to have a more egalitarian marriage, which is actually helpful to marriage in 2018. That was not always the case. It used to be that women having a career was a problem for marriage, but luckily we've progressed on that. But it also means in that demographic group that people are balancing a lot of roles. They're both trying to co-parent, they're both trying to work, they're both trying to manage the household, and there's huge areas that become ripe for conflict because of that difficult, complex balancing act.
All right. So you outlined some of those difficult areas, and let's take a look at some of these. You know, running to, as it were, anesthetics out there like alcohol when you want to escape, when people have affairs, and, you know, that whole issue of financial pressure. Let's look at some of those.
Yeah, so the book is, as you mentioned, it's organized around different, what you might call rough patch issues. And the reason I did it that way is when I first envisioned this book, I thought, someone's going to come to this book for help with a specific problem that they are struggling with right now. So I want this book to be very accessible. I want people to be able to zero in immediately. You know, I'm worrying I'm drinking too much or my husband's drinking too much. I'm going to go right to the chapter on that to try to get something useful right away, right? So there are these very time-tested and, you know, common struggles that people have. One is about substance use and sort of how it serves to help people escape and relax, but how it can also become a slippery slope into a problem that really makes the emotional communication in the relationship difficult or impossible. Certainly affairs, I write two different chapters. One's called Love Sickness, one's called Affairs, but basically it's about, you know, how do you stay in a long-term sexually monogamous marriage, and what are the challenges to that, and what are the vulnerabilities in that? And that's been around pretty much forever. And then, of course, money, I would say, is probably the most conflictual issue for couples. And that's because you have to be able to collaborate. You have to be able to have a shared big picture. And those are often struggles for people.
All right. And, I love the way you titled that chapter on money, The Knife in the Drawer. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, you know, what I think about money is that it's very close to our sense of survival and our sense of identity. And so even if you're not living on the edge of complete destitution, money can be freighted with feelings of, am I valuable? Do I have enough? Will I survive? It can be freighted with very highly emotional issues. And so what that means is that it attracts a lot of anxiety to itself, and it also lends itself to a sort of zero-sum mentality. You know, if you get what you want, I'm going to be deprived of what I want. And that is the mentality that is most toxic to marriage, because marriage is between two individuals. They both have their needs, desires, history, goals, etc. But they also need to create something called the marriage, this living, breathing relationship that they create together and they both invest in emotionally and fiscally. And so sometimes it's hard for people to really say, okay, what's the best compromise here? What's the best way to mesh what we each need and want? What's the best way to understand how we see money together. All those things are incredibly hard for people to do. And often we didn't grow up in families where anyone talked in a healthy way about money.
You know, that piece, I'm all over. I'm just, it makes me completely crazy when I realize that, you know, children are never given a framework for understanding money, as it were, and teenagers and young adults. So they just sort of, you know, are thrown out there and flounder around, try to make some sense of it all, are never taught how to really be able to put together a strategy and a plan as they go forward. You know, if many of them knew that just by saving $10,000 a year, if it's humanly possible or whatever, over the course of time and investing it at 8% a year, you got yourself seven figures by the time you want to retire, and you will retire well. Well, who tells anyone that? Who tells anyone how to be fiscally responsible? Instead, there's a lot of, you're the psychologist, acting out with money. You know, I never had this as a child, so I'm going to let it rip now. And that's one spouse or one member of the couple. And then the other member is someone who's so frugal, it's almost laughable. And so how do you get them to even have a conversation in the same room? I think that once the dopamine, pleasure, lovey-dovey, you know, hormones are all out of the way over the course of the first several years of the marriage, and all of a sudden it becomes penultimately clear things ain't working so well. And I think you're absolutely right. I think finances are a huge problem and a major rough patch. No question about that. Do you find that they take long for people to be able to work out? Or when people come to you and they have that issue, what do you usually recommend?
Yeah, so I think everything you're saying is true, that we, you know, a lot of the critical life skills we don't learn early on, right, in school or in our families, for instance, finances, and for instance, emotional communication and intelligence, right? So this is an area that is both an opportunity to, in a sense, heal and improve, but it's also a highly emotional, difficult issue. So the way I think about it is sort of two-pronged. One is the kind of educational part that you're talking about, like know what you don't know. You know, that we grow up in a culture, I think, that isn't particularly encouraging of sort of a hard-nosed approach to money. And I think, you know, the early blush of romance, you don't think it's particularly romantic or sexy to be talking about dollars and cents. So all that, just to notice that you're already, you know, dealing with that can help, the self-awareness that goes with that. But I also think, alluding to what I said before, that it's a mindset that I'm trying to help people cultivate. In other words, it's not all zero sum. It's not you versus me. It's us. And that is a state of mind. You know, psychologists call it the we story, or the story of us, or the marriage state of mind. There are a lot of phrases to it. But part of the goal or work of marriage is to have a sense that we are a unit. The sum is bigger than the parts. And what are we trying to accomplish long term? What's our big picture? And I think people have a very hard time often thinking in big picture terms about money or about many other things.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, you mentioned this before you even get into money. When you talk about in your chapter, marriage as a story, the fact that marriage is a story. And you said here, again, as a therapist, my days are filled with people's compelling stories. I am interested in their stories, but I'm at least as interested in how they tell their stories. Does a person understand his own story as one version of reality, or as the right version? Is he flexible about it? Can he imagine that his feelings could fit more than one story, and that one story might be more conducive to producing certain feelings than another? In a couple, can each partner be interested in or curious about the other one's story? I love that issue of the story. I just think that that's so amazing, because it also goes back to what you said about a marriage being kind of a living, breathing, dynamic entity that's sort of a work in progress, that it just keeps going and going and hopefully evolving and growing and hitting rough patches and adapting and adjusting and all the rest of it. So do you talk to people about this issue of marriage as a story?
I do talk to them about that. And I would say that that ties to probably one of the biggest points in this book, which is when you feel you're struggling or unhappy or dissatisfied or something's not working in your marriage or your long-term relationship, what I say is the first place to look is yourself. You know, the marriage is almost prone to making us blame the other person, right? And so part of the challenge here is, what am I bringing to this situation? And that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a story. We all have a mindset. We all have a perspective. We all have a filter. It's complex. It's partly created in the relationship itself, but it's partly created by our own character, our own temperament, and our own history. And it's incredibly powerful if you can look at that. If you can say, okay, so my husband went out the door this morning and he didn't say goodbye. And wow, I'm telling a whole story right now in the subsequent hour after he shut the door about who he is, how he feels about me, what I'm putting up with, and to even notice that you're weaving a story about the other person and to say, what's contributing to that? Oh, maybe I feel inadequate right now in my life. Maybe I'm ready. I'm scanning the environment. I'm vigilant for not being taken care of. And if you can look at yourself, then you don't contribute to the toxic cycle that's going to happen when they come home and you give them the silent treatment and you're sort of, you know, you hurt me. And then, of course, they're just trying to survive emotionally at that point and say, I'm not a bad person. I'm not an unloving person. I didn't mean to hurt you. And then you're in some kind of difficult dynamic. So it gives you extraordinary power and freedom if you can start looking at your own story.
I love it. And I think that people need to pay attention to that. I love the nuance on that. You know, there's so many of these, you know, how-to books out here on marriage and coupling and whatever, and relationships. But the issue of story, I think, is extremely powerful. I just do. And people need to understand their own story. I think a lot of women, correct me if I'm wrong, give away their story. I think they live in deference to other people's needs.
I was just talking to a very old friend whose husband trained as a doctor. And so their whole early life was her adapting to his career and schedule. And she was, had been thinking about this and was saying, wow, you know, I never really reclaimed my power or my place here. And they had just sort of fallen into this pattern. You know, I also just want to say something related about women that I think, often couples over time get into a sexual dynamic where it sort of seems like, you know, he wants more sex, she doesn't, and so forth. And I think one of the stories that women tell themselves, and a very harmful story as they go through life and they have babies and they don't have the figure they used to have and whatever, is that they're not attractive, they're not desirable, and that is part of what shuts them down. You know, it gets thought of in terms of what his opinion is going to be, but women are incredibly hard on themselves in terms of their attractiveness and their bodies and so forth. And I wish I had a nickel for every time a guy said, I wish my wife was not so self-critical about her sexiness and her body, because I actually find her attractive, but she's sort of detaching herself and saying that's not, you know, of interest to me, partly because of her own self-judgment. And I think that's extremely important for women to notice the story they're telling themselves about themselves in that way.
You know, when you brought up the body, one of your chapters was Body, Health, and Age, The Stakes Only Get Higher. That issue, you know, that's really associated with women. I mean, obviously men go through physical changes and all the rest of it, but, you know, money on it that they're not sitting there being self-critical and self-judgmental. They may just sort of, you know, almost a sideline kind of thought in their mind, like, well, you know, I could probably lose a few, or my hair's disappearing and nobody died. But with women, good Lord, the minute the aging things, you know, starts to set in, it gets ugly. And if you've already been self-critical to start with, now we've got a real party going on. And I think that level of attractiveness, that feeling of self-worth, self-esteem, the body slamming and shaming that women do, I think that's a huge rough patch that really is a woman's place, you know, in her brain. And then I think that, you know, when a guy, you know, basically reinforces that by saying things like, you know, you could probably drop a few, you know, you could do this, you could do that. How about this plastic surgeon over here? You got to sit back and say, whoa, what's going on here? So what do you recommend?
Yeah. So I talk a lot about weight in that chapter. And I talk a lot about the whole question, which is a big, important question in a marriage, whether it's about bodies or anything else. It's like, how do you talk to your partner about something that's turning you off or difficult for you in a way that doesn't go to that shame place, right? And doesn't feel like you're encroaching on their autonomy, right? So weight is a perfect issue. You know, you may be a spouse who feels like, you know, it's hard for me to be attracted to my spouse if they're this thin or that fat, right? You may actually feel that way. How do you even begin to talk about that? It seems almost immediately going to be a shameful issue to the other person. And so I give a very lengthy sort of analysis of how that conversation might happen. But I think in a long-term relationship, if the emotional connection is working and there is some kind of physical connection that flows from that emotional connection, aging and the deterioration of the body is much less difficult. And in other words, I think when people are disconnected and alienated and not connecting in any way, you know, the aging thing, the stakes do get higher. You know, it becomes more and more hard to make contact to that sort of vital, erotic, attractive part of yourself.
Yo, there's no question about it. You know, in your chapter toward the end, love is a conversation. Well, as much as marriage is a story, love is a conversation. So you have several conversations here that you recommend. Keeping, you know, the one that really hit me hard was the verse one. Keep having the hard and easy conversations with each other. I think a lot of people avoid that, don't they?
I think they do. And what one thing I'm really trying to encourage in this book, and this book is not, the tone is not an expert on high saying, do these five things and you'll be happy. The tone is, hey, we're all in this together and we're all trying to figure it out. And a relationship is a process. And it's not only one conversation, it's many conversations. And so what I try to say to people is, look, the sign that your relationship is satisfying or good is not that it's harmonious and it's got a smooth surface. It's, are you engaging each other on talking about and dealing with the difficult things that life throws at you, between you, with your kids, with your jobs? In other words, if you can actually be honest with each other about what you're struggling with, not in a blaming way, not in a critical way, not like you're my problem, but hey, there are hard conversations. Like we were saying, you know, you're actually so skinny, it's hard for me to desire you. That is a very hard conversation, right? But there are millions of them. And I'm really encouraging people to say, think to yourself, it's a good day for me if I had the courage and the guts to try to talk to my partner in a truthful, authentic, and kind way about something I'm struggling with.
I just love that. You know, when you ended the book in that lovely paragraph, you said, if there's a gift on the other side of the rough patch, it's emerging with a life that feels enlarged and enlightened. When we've figured out how to be who we are while staying in loving connection with others, we've arrived at the harmonic balance of intimacy and, oh boy, exploration, commitment, and freedom. We put our hearts into it. And now, astonishingly, all that work, all those hard conversations pay off. You know, and I think that what you're saying is that you need to have the conversations, the hard and easy ones, with each other, you know, in the relationship. You said you want to have conversations with yourself on an ongoing basis, sort of a self-assessment. Hey, you know, what responsibility do you have in this relationship? And then you said, keep having conversations with the culture. What does that mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, just as we were talking about, right, in terms of health and beauty and feeling attractive and all that. You know, that's an incredibly oppressive cultural force, right, for women. But I'm also saying that the good thing about marriage is that it's just between two people. You get to figure out for yourselves the kind of creation that you want to have. Now, that may sound like a daunting task, but we don't live in an era where you have to stay married regardless, right? We actually live in an era where you have a lot of flexibility and a lot of freedom. And I'm encouraging people not to just sort of hunker down and get stuck and sort of say, well, this is just what it is, but to really engage with the question, what do we want to create together? And I think that may take all sorts of forms that maybe aren't conventional. You know, in one of my chapters, I talked to this other therapist about, isn't it too bad we don't have a more flexible and more diverse array of ways of thinking about this? For instance, you know, maybe you got married very young and you feel like you never explored certain things, and you feel like maybe we need a couple months to just live apart and explore, or maybe we want to live separately, or maybe we want to take separate vacations, or maybe how do we want to do it to nurture ourselves as individuals and the marriage as a relationship? And that takes creativity.
I love it.
It takes courage.
Well, it's what I love to call the royal we-ness. It's a we mm-hmm. thing. And I think that sometimes we fall back into the me and I thing way too much, you know, when we're doing this. So time to back up and look at those conversations in a way to be able to explore them. Everyone out there on her podcast land, we have been talking to the author of The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together, Dr. Daphne DeMarnif. And if you want to learn more about her wonderful work, please run on over to her website. I'll spell it for you. Daphne, DaphneDe for DeMarnif, MarnefFe. DaphneDeMarnif.com to learn more about her wonderful work. And please run on out and get this book. I found this personally to be one of the easiest books to read, and I felt that there was tremendous compassion throughout the entire book, and that just gives you a small clue as to why Dr. DeMarnif is such a great psychologist. Dr. DeMarnif, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. And everyone out there in Her podcast land, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment right now and rate and review this podcast, because this was a great segment on getting through that rough patch as a couple. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Hey, thanks for listening, and stay well.